Hi, everybody. My name's Roger, and I'm an alcoholic. Get mistaken a lot. A lot of people think I'm from Boston. My sobriety date is November the 12th, 1990. I have a sponsor. His name is Ron. Ron has a sponsor, and his name is Bob. And Bob has a sponsor, and his name is Tom. Tom has a sponsor. His name is Paul. We got a truckload of people. And I sponsor others. That's what they say in Florida. They always announce. They let you know that they got a sponsor. They ain't running crazy. But I'm tickled to death to be here. I've been sitting over there with gas. I couldn't wait to get up here. Oh, my God. Be glad you're sitting down there. Woo! It's hot up here. I love AA, and I love God, and I love being sober. And I ain't ashamed of any three of those. Thank God that y'all invited me to come here. Thank you, Bill. And I say it because I got kids. They're at home. But I thank y'all very much for inviting me. And it's always a pleasure and an honor to do this. This ain't something I do all the time. Because when you got youngins, you don't do a lot. So to leave home and come here... Thank you, Jesus. First time I've slept in a bed by myself in a long time. Wasn't bad. Ain't bad. But I'm glad to be here. I've never been this part of town. I mean, the part of the country. I've been to a lot of places, but I've never been to Georgia. And I take that back. I went to Atlanta for the big convention over there. And that was a good time. I'm telling you, I got hugs. Woo! Man, I was like a big old family reunion. It was really good. And I thank y'all for letting me come here. I really like y'all. I didn't say love. Because as some guy said, they do a lot of hugging here. I said, yeah, we do that back home. He said, I'm not coming to your place. But I don't have hugophobia. I'm all right with it. I'll hug you in a heartbeat. Good to be here. I know what to do when asked to do this. I ain't confused. Since telling a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. I come from a good home, not a rich home, dirt poor home, a little town called Elkton, Kentucky. Now, my daddy was a great big old man. I loved my daddy. And my mother was a great big old woman. But, man, we was poor as dirt. Poor. Y'all know what poor means? Government cheese. You ever ate government cheese? Try putting that in the microwave oven. You ain't going to throw that in there and get it right out. It's going to be there a while. And those little cheap, remember them old cheap is cheese slices with that little... No, that ain't going to work. You better get a butcher knife or a hacksaw. But this reminds me of school being in here. Remember the school auditoriums? That's what this has been reminding me of all weekend. But we were poor, man. I mean poor, but didn't know it. That's what was so cool about it. We were poor. I mean, I wore my brother's underwear for years. I ain't kidding. They built a Walmart and we went and got me some underwear. But we were very poor, didn't know it, and didn't bother us. You know what I mean? Like on Christmas. Now, I wear bibbed overalls all the time. I see guys wearing them here, but I wear them all the time. As a matter of fact, Bill, I was going to wear them here. I was. But my wife saw me with them on. I'm in the mirror going. She said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm going to Georgia in these bibs." She said, "No, you're not." I said, "Wait a minute, big girl. You don't tell me what to wear. I wear what I want to. And by God, I'll do whatever I want to do." And I took them off. I'm married to a redhead, and you can throw that machoism out the window. She ain't going for it. I'm grateful to be married. God, I couldn't get a girl for nothing. I couldn't. In Kentucky, we have trouble with our teeth. It ain't funny. I came to AA in November of 1990. Didn't have a tooth in my head. Not because I got them knocked out. Because if I don't say anything else tonight, remember this. Floss. No teeth. And there's nothing to hold your tongue. And I'd stand back by the coffee. I love this, man. I'd stand back by the coffee and the donuts and the cookies. And I feel real good about myself. I really do. I'm really glad to be here. And girls would walk by and snicker. And I go sit down by my sponsor and I tell my sponsor, "These girls think I'm funny." He'd say, "No, they don't. They think you're a lizard." But I love AA. Hey, you know why AA works? Because there's so many different people. You know what I mean? We got weirdos. We got the booger eaters. We got, it's not mentioned, I just say booger eater. There's not really a booger eater. Just an Kentucky expression. You got real intelligent people. And now that's the ones I love to sit by. You know what I mean? I love to sit by real smart people because you can hear something ticking over there. You sit by me, you ain't hear nothing. This will be the dumbest talk y'all ever heard. I said that at a big eating meeting in Kentucky. I said, "This would be the dumbest talk y'all ever heard." And this old couple, after the talk was done, come up, and the little lady, she grabbed my hand, was rubbing it, and her husband's going, "By God, you don't lie." And a guy in my home group, when I was living in a halfway house called the Talbot House, and he brought some of those, remember in Halloween you wore those little Dracula teeth? He brought them to me and he fouled off the fangs. He said, "Just try it, man." I tried it. As long as I didn't say anything, I looked good. Huh. In the big book, it says God's will for the alcoholic is to be happy, joyous, and free. Man, if you're not happy, joyous, and free, something's wrong. You're still dependent on what you think. And look how that's working. Oh. And I believe that Webster's Dictionary says to be happy, you must be content with what you have. And joy, that joy they talk about, is that joy that your sponsor got when you started to get sober. The same way my sponsor did. He'd bring me to a meeting. My hair was combed. And he'd point across the room. He'd go, "It's mine." He had joy. And to be free, you must be free of self. I'm telling you, tonight, this whole weekend, I've been happy, joyous, and free. If I could just get out of the way. You know what I mean? Just push you out of the way for an hour. Just for an hour. You'll be back. Don't worry. I love what I've been introduced to. Thank God for my sponsor, Charlie. I had a sponsor. He was great. He didn't want nothing to do with me. That's when you know you're going to get sober. When you ask the guy to sponsor, he said, "Charlie, will you be my sponsor?" He said, "Hell no." So the next meeting, I'm traveling with about 60 people who are in rehab. You could spot us. You know, you'll see people come to the meeting. We're easy to spot, man. You know, we're the ones at the coffee with the sugar. I love it. But I come from the country. And just my dad was a great big old man. He looked like a tree. You know, when you're little, your dad looked so big. Mine did. Had big broad shoulders. He could wear any shirt. He could almost button them around his neck and go down his chest. And get about halfway down his chest, he couldn't button his shirt no more because he had a big gut. And everywhere you went, you saw his belly button. I mean, he had the patent on it. And he always had his finger in his belly button. Well, back in these days, that was all right. And me and my brother were short and heavy. And he'd buy us bibbed overalls. And on Christmas, he'd buy us a pocket comb that had the little chrome clip. And I'd go to school. Everybody else had new tennis shoes, new Levi's. They say, "Rod, what'd you get?" I'd show that clip, and I felt like I had the world. I thought that was the best present. And we'd go to school, man, and just everybody would just love to be around us. And our entertainment was to go to the funeral home. That sounds morbid, don't it? But where I come from, all the stores closed as soon as it got dark. Wasn't nothing else open but the funeral home. And my dad loved to go there. He'd take me and my brother Ralph. We'd get that old pickup truck with them cattle racks on the back of it and pull in that old parking lot. And he'd park that truck, and I'd reach for them old vice grips to open that truck. And my dad was a disciplinarian. It's some words are hard for me to say now that I got teeth. And he'd say, "Don't move." And he'd look at us real stern. He said, "Do not eat nothing." And we'd go, "Okay, Daddy." And we'd get out of the truck. My dad would go up in the funeral home and in these old Baptist funeral homes, they bring food when people die, like beans, like we've had all weekend. Beans. And cornbread. If I die tonight, please don't bring beans. And poor country people would sit there looking at their loved one in that casket like this. Me and my brother go around stealing those caps off the valve stems. Those, you know what I'm talking about, valve caps? We don't own anything but rubber. Where I come from, you can ride a bicycle without the tar or the tube. We're stealing, we ain't got nothing to put them on. And we'd run up into the funeral home, run through the kitchen, and we'd see them beans and then cornbread. And then there they were. Piggly Wiggly makes a sandwich cookie. They're called 66. You know why they're called 66? I'll tell you. 6 across, 11 in each row. Go ahead, add it up. When I figured it out, my brother goes, "He's a genius." He did. And we saw those cookies on the counter. We didn't go over and have one cookie. We bush hogged them. Ha! Forgot everything my dad said. I'm going somewhere with this. We walk out into the parlor. There's my dad up by the casket with his finger in his belly button. He don't say, "Hey, come here." He waited till we got right up there to him and start beating the hell out of him. Right in front of that casket. And everybody in the funeral home was going, "Look at them heathens." And right about that time, a man walked up to my dad, had on a nice suit coat, and out of his pocket, you could see these shiny cards, like business cards. Went up to my dad. They called my dad Butterball. He said, "Are you Butterball?" And my dad said, "I am." And he pulled his finger out of his belly button, shook that guy's hand. And all us kids went, "Ugh." He said, "Butterball, I want you to come to Louisville and drive a truck for us." Did y'all hear what I said? Louisville. It's not Louisville. Yeah. It's where they have the Kentucky Derby in Louisville. Now, I'm telling you, it's for a reason. You go to Louisville and you're riding in your car and you stop somebody on the street and say, "Is this Louisville?" He goes, "No, it's around the alley." Louisville. Louisville. There it is. And we rode all, this is before 65 was complete. You had to take 31W all the way from western Kentucky into Louisville. We went all the way on Dixie Highway. Got right into the town where you got right to the river. If you took a right, I would have been brought up in the beautiful East End. But he took a left. Went in one of the roughest neighborhoods in that town. A town called Portland. Nothing but shotgun houses. Nothing but beer joints on every corner. And Catholic churches. I have a resentment. Because I suffer. I'm dually diagnosed. Yeah. I have alcoholism and Southern Baptism. And either one of them will kill you. And my dad started riding down the street, and he'd look for an old house, one of them shotgun houses, and it had there was a white cardboard sign on his house that said four, the letter four, and the word rent. He got out of the truck, grabbed that cardboard, and started reading it. My brother looked at me and said, "What is he doing?" And about that time, a man come out of the house next door. He said, "Hey, buddy, you want to rent that house?" My dad said, "I do." He pulled out a key out of his pocket. Back in them days, you didn't have to fill out an arrest record or a financial report. He pulled that key out, handed it to my dad, and that man looked my dad right in the eye. He said, "Have my money in 30 days. My dad backed that old truck up. He had one stick of furniture, an old couch. Pushed that couch in that front room. Got all us kids in the house. Said he's going to Booty Probus's used furniture and get us some furniture. Now, to the untrained ear, I thought he said, "We're getting new furniture." He come back with a truckload of junk. Junk. Five rollaway beds. Y'all know what rollaway beds are? Push them rollaway beds off. Pushed them in the middle of that shotgun house. Unhooked them, laid them down. Then he went back out in the truck. Had an old round table with chrome around the edges. Put it on the side and rolled it like a wheel. Brought in five chairs that didn't match. Sat them around that kitchen table. Then he brought in a great big old TV, set it on the floor, went back out to the truck, set another TV on that TV. Me and my brothers looking at each other going, "Look at this." He went to work on Monday, driving the truck, and they paid him cash money. Back then, they didn't know if he'd work out. He come home with two big A&P sacks of groceries. Come through the door, carrying them those grocery sacks, and he goes back in the kitchen. We follow him like hungry wolves. He gets back in the kitchen, takes out a long stalk of bologna, lays it on the table. Brought out a box of crackers. Big crackers. Remember big crackers when all four of them were stuck together? Laid it on the table. Took out his pocket knife. Opened it up. Started to cut that bologna. He looked down at me and my brother and he'd say, "How thick? You want it this thick or that thick?" Cut that bologna. Lay it on top of that cracker. Waller it around that mustard jar and make a happy face. "Shut up." We'd put the other cracker on top of that bologna and take a bite of it, and that mustard would shoot through them holes. We'd turn it sideways, lick that mustard off, go in the front room and lay on the floor in our underwear and watch those two TVs. Everybody had two TVs back then. You know what I mean? One of them had the picture and the other one had the sound. Woo! Man, I was never so proud to bring friends over. Started going to school. My dad would take us to the barber college. Y'all know what the barber college is? That's where they cut hair on poor people. My dad took me and my brother in this place, and a real hateful man worked there. As soon as he walked in, that old man said, "How many?" My dad said, "I got two." He grabbed me by the hair and set me in the chair. Now, I was getting ready to go, "Can you trim off?" And he pulled my hair back like this, tucked them clippers, and started cutting. He only had one cut, and it was called off. Our chairman's been there. We walked out of that barber college, looked like two little pit bulls. Y'all know what we look like. Y'all got them cousins you dislike. That was me and my brother. Didn't nobody like us. He took us to an old secondhand store and bought us polished cotton shirts and polished cotton pants. And we'd go to school and look like two little heavy maintenance men. Oh, it's real funny tonight. And we'd walk down the hall of the school and nothing but greasers. They're combing their hair back, leaning against the wall, and they got on Levi's, skinny Levi's, and a black T-shirt with cigarettes rolled up their arm. I don't like skinny people. I'm getting better. Thank God for the steps. But back then, I did not like skinny people. Because they didn't make Huskies back then. I couldn't wear Levi's. I had to wear polished cotton pants. And we'd walk down the hall of the school. And we're brand new at this school. And them greasers seen us walk by. And this wing guy goes, "Hey, we got a light out." My brother busted him right in the mouth. Right in the mouth. The very next day. Very next day. The big book says that Dr. Silkworth said, we must go back through our lives. Nothing counts but honesty and thoroughness. Anybody read that? The very next day, same school, same greasers, same polished cotton pants and polished cotton shirts, and we're walking down the same hall. But I'm walking a little slower behind my brother. I'm getting ready to have a personality change. We're walking down the hall. My brother gets in front of the greasers. They don't say a word. He can't see me. I'm walking in front of them. Right then and there, I had a personality change. Right then. I have inventoried this. And I'm telling you, this is when it happened. There was a little guy at the school, a little fat guy, or let me say, chubby. His name is Charlie. They called him No Neck. I like chubby people because I'm chubby. I started hanging around with Charlie. Years later, years on down the road, Charlie would get sober and become my first sponsor. Charlie said, "Rise, do you drink?" I go, "Yeah, man, I drink." Never had alcohol in my life, ever. Never had a drink. He said, "Be out in front of school. I'll have a bottle." That night, I'm looking for Charlie. Here he comes. Had a bottle. So I said, "Ride, you ready?" I said, "I'm ready." He pulled that bottle right out of that head, the sack twisted around his neck. Pulled it out. It's a bottle of Orange Rock vodka. Woo! Everybody's drank Orange Rock vodka. Haven't you? You know why you haven't? It's very expensive. $1.13 a quart. Charlie, take the top off that bottle. He'd lean back like this, take a big pull off of it, and then pull it out real fast. He starts slapping himself in the face. He said, "Come on, Raj. Hit me in the face like they do in them movies." I said, "Hand me that bottle." I grabbed that bottle and put it on my bottom lip and took a big pull. And every time you put alcohol in me, every time, if I drink tonight, the same thing will happen. You put alcohol in me and my jaws stick out. And I hand the bottle back to Charlie. Charlie grabbed the bottle. He leaned back, takes another big pull off of it, pulled it out real quick, and started bobbing and weaving. He'd say, "Come on, Raj, hit me in the face like you." And I'm trying to grab that bottle. I get the bottle from him. I lean back. I take a big pull off of it, and this time my hands start tightening. And I thought, "Say something about that jaw now." Gave the bottle back to Charlie. Charlie grabbed that bottle, and I'm standing over here going, "I wish you would." Charlie took a big pull off of it, pulled it out. He goes, "Ed Ride!" I went, "Bam!" Hit him right in the face. And he sat down on the curb and started crying. Started calling me all them Georgia names. Don't act like you don't know them. And that was the first time I ever got a buzz. Remember buzz? Hell yeah, you do. That's why you're here. I got a buzz. I'd never had a buzz before. My ears got real hot. My neck got real red. And I got real sexy. Everybody in there's done it. Don't act like you haven't. I love people go, "He's so crazy." Think I'm lying right by a beer joint tonight. Look out in the back parking lot. I got a buzz. And we walk around to the football game. We remember this when you lean on the fence and girls would walk behind you. Charlie said he'd never heard this. I heard it. Girls would walk by and say stuff like, "I want you. Kiss me tonight." Charlie said they never said that. I heard it. And when I got sober, he said, "You have a disease of perception. I can't even spell it." But man, I love to drink. I'd rather drink than eat. I'm not kidding. I'm showing you because I'm eating now. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. And then things started turning. My dad didn't like the way I was living. I was getting locked up. Getting locked up for dumb stuff. You know how we are. Peeing against the wall. "What are you doing?" "Nothing." I'd get locked up. And my dad said, "If you keep living like that, you need to leave." I said, where am I going to go? Go live with my brother. His brother's a drunk. I took a Greyhound, went back to Western Kentucky. My uncle come and picked me up, but I can't find him. I walked over to his truck. He's in the floorboard. He said, you drive. I started driving for him. I get in his truck and ride down the road. He'd sit over and drink out of this old milk jug. Looked like stuff in it. I keep watching him drink. I said, Uncle Boone, I drank. Why didn't you tell me? He handed me the jug. I took a big hit off of it. What in the... Good God. I got a buzz immediately. We're riding down the road. I go off the road, hit them reflectors. Get back on the road. You ever done that? Go off the road, come back on the road. Go off the road, come back. Then a state trooper got right behind me. I'd go off the road, he'd come right behind me. Turned the lights on. Got out of that trooper's car, walked up to that truck. He said, get out of that truck. I can't, you get in. He got in, took me and my Uncle Boone to jail in our truck. I got it together. And it just continues. Nothing changes. That's what AA is about. If you don't change, nothing's going to change. How often people come here and they don't change nothing. And you say, man, where's Louis? Oh, he went back out. He didn't change his thinking. If you don't change your thinking, you always go back to drinking. Always. This ain't heavy stuff here. This is easy stuff. Because I couldn't change. Inside of me, I'm worthless. If I could just get out of myself. And when he locked us up, I started hollering for my lawyer. All drunks have a lawyer. Get my lawyer. He'd say, what's his name? I go, you know him. He said, if you don't shut up, I'm going to take you to Western Kentucky State Hospital. Now, Western Kentucky, it's a big old place. It's got a rock wall around it. And they let them crazy people out in the yard and walk around. I opened my mouth. He took me to Western Kentucky. Walked up these stairs and he put me in there. He said, go out on the yard. We'll call your name when we're ready for you. I'm walking around the yard, and there's an old guy sitting in a chair with his ear against the wall like this. I go, man, they're really crazy here. I keep looking at him. I got to go ask him. And I've been there a half hour. I got to ask him. I walk over. I go, hey, man, what are you listening to? He said, sit down. Sit down. He got up. Let me sit down. He said, now put your ear against that wall. I put my ear against there. I can't hear. I don't hear nothing. And I'd look at him. Hey, man, I don't hear nothing. He said, it's been like it all day. That's when you want to ease away from them. I stayed there 90 days, and they let me go, and I had to call my uncle to come get me. I waited, and I waited. Finally, he pulled up. I got in the truck with him. He goes, what do they say? I said, a lot. For 90 days worth. He said, you drive. Nothing changed. He would drink, I would drive. I'd get tired of it, I would drink. We went up around the square. Y'all know what a square is? Went up around the courthouse. I rode around, just kept riding around. Here come that same trooper. Turned his lights on. I jumped out of the car, ran back to him. I go, hey, did you pick on somebody else? I said, look at that guy. Look at that guy. I said, why are you picking on me? He said, you're the only one riding on the sidewalk. He didn't have to tell me. I got in the back seat. I didn't change nothing. If you don't change, nothing else will change. Nothing. Went back up there and he checks me in. This guy that checked me in 90 days ago is not there anymore. They got a good-looking woman. I mean good-looking. She's got bumps. She come on, I'm sitting in the hallway. She goes, what's your problem? Huh? She said, are you on medication? I said, no, I'm not on medication. She said, well, what's your problem? I pointed down at the nurse's station. I said, they say I'm an alcoholic. She said, don't move. She goes to the nurse's station. She's fanning through this notebook. She comes storming back, looked me right in the face. She said, they're right. She said, there's nothing we can do for you here. You might as well call somebody to come get you. We can't help you. And I called my uncle. I waited and waited. And then they let me go. They said, call a cab or something. I walk out to the highway. I start hitchhiking. I hitchhiked back to Louisville. I got to Louisville. And didn't change nothing. Same old stuff. Went back down to beer joint. Hung out with my friends. And got locked up. Went in front of this judge who's done it. He knew me. He said, Roger, if you come back again, I'm going to help you. Get in front of me one more time. I dare you come in front of me one more time. I'm going to help you. I said, Your Honor, I won't be back. I've straightened up. I said, I'm doing good now. I left the courthouse. I'm gone 3 days. I'm peeing on the side of this car. And they pulled right up behind me. They said, get in the car. I said, man, I can't go back in front of that judge. Oh, you're not going in front of him. They lied. I went in front of that judge. He said, read out the case. Said my name, Roger Hightower. Yeah. Said, it's your lucky day. I'm going to help you today. I thought, all right. I'm going to give you 5 years in the penitentiary. What? He said, I'm going to give you 5 years in the penitentiary, LaGrange Reformatory. Sent me out to LaGrange. I stayed out there for about 2 months, and then they moved me to Bell County. Got to Bell County, and God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Put me in a cell with a young black kid from Eastern Kentucky. I'm a redneck from Western Kentucky. The East, the West, they don't mix. He's black. I'm red. We don't mix. But God works in mysterious ways. I'm standing from the cell. This kid's name is Hambone. I thought if God sent me an angel, at least send me Eric. Or Michael. Oh, heck no. I got to have Hambone. Hambone works in the laundry and he's folding towels in his cell. They open up the cell. They unhook me. Hambone holds his arms up. He goes, God loves you. I went, wrong cell. And it was the right cell. God ain't never. He's always on time. Look back through your life. You should have been dead, some of you. You should have. There's no way you should be here. And I'm in the cell with Hambone. And in the morning, he'd get on the side of his bunk and he would pray. Oh, boy. He's praying. I'd get up and he'd say, Roger, won't you pray with me? I'd give him my best. I said, Hambone, won't you go to hell? That's my best. Cool guys, you know. I'm cool. I gave him my best. They take us out on the road and we pick up trash. You've seen us. We come back in. And he'd open that cell and Hambone get on his knees again. You don't get on your knees in front of another man in penitentiary. And he'd hold his arm up again. He'd say, Roger, won't you pray with me? And I'd say something crazy. I'd cuss him again. 8 months go by. I'm running out of cuss words. How long can you just waller in that self-pity stuff? Like a whirlpool of Roger. Snot and everything. All that filth that you carry. And I'm getting sick of myself. I really am. I'm getting so sick of me. And I'm out on that highway and I'm picking that trash up and I picked up a church track. I went, what the heck? And it showed showed a cross and showed two men, stick men, running to the middle. When they get to the middle, it light up. The cross would light up. And I get it. I don't know where I got it, but I get it. I've been living in the dark. When you live just with you, it's so dark. And I can't stand myself anymore. And on the bus ride back to the penitentiary, I said, if that black kid asked me tonight, I'm praying with him. I've had it. I am so sick of me. Got in front of the cell, they opened it up. Hambone got on his knees. He said, Roger, won't you pray with me? And I pushed his arm back. And I got down on my knees right beside him. And he went off. You ever seen people go off? He starts speaking in tongues. If he would have had long hair, he would have been straight up. He went off. And I was getting ready to do it. I go, man, I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask God to help me. And right when I got ready to ask God to help me, here come those guards. And that kid got real loud. Those guards come right in front of us and started counting us. And then he went on, and Hambone got real loud. He said, Roger, God don't care who's watching. He said, man, God don't care who's listening. And I'm thinking, you want to bring it down? I mean, he's getting bold and loud. He said, Roger, God is the perfect gentleman. He's ready whenever you're ready. I have nothing. I ain't got nothing. But I've heard them say at the AA meeting, everybody that would talk, they'd always, each one of them would share their experience, strength, and hope, and they'd say, things got better when I asked God to help me. And I got back down on my knees and I asked God to help me. And something changed. I'm a weirdo. I'm telling you, man. I used to look at people. I'd look at somebody and go, man, look at that guy back there. He's a nice, this side of my head would say, he's a nice guy. This side would say, go smack the shit out of him. But I didn't do it. After I asked God to help me, something changed that night. If you don't change, nothing's going to change. I know you know it all. Every one of us in here knows it all. Dummy up. I think it's time to dummy up. And that's what I did. I dummied up, man. That little black kid would start talking to me, and I'd listen. Before, I wouldn't listen. And somehow, they told me to go back to Louisville. They sent me back to Louisville, and I got back to Louisville, and I'm in jail at Louisville, and the judge said, I want you to go to the Talbot House. I didn't ask him to send me to Talbot House. Sent me to the Talbot House. It's a halfway house. You could only stay 3 months. I stayed for 2 years. And everybody would say, some are sicker than others. I'd look around, where are they at? And life was going great. And I met a little redheaded girl named Beth. And I'd sit behind her every night. And every night I'd lean up to her. I'd say, hey, Beth, when we going out? And she'd swing around real fast. She'd say, when pigs fly. I asked Charlie to be my sponsor. He's been there for 12 years. Charlie said, we're going to take you to the School of Dentistry and get you some teeth. Shut up. My teeth grew back. Beth's never seen me with teeth. I got my teeth back. I've been following her for 3 years. I haven't touched her. I got my teeth in. I'm sitting right behind her. I said, Beth, when are we going out? Guess what happened? The pig flew. She said, I'll go out with you, but we're going someplace where it's lidded. Lots of light. I said, how about Dairy Queen? She goes, that'll work. I met her at Dairy Queen. I went inside, brought out 2 cones. She's standing by the door of her car. And I gave her the cone. She grabbed a cone, and then she leaned in and kissed me right in the mouth. Shut up. I thought my ice cream was going to melt. It was wonderful. And we started dating. And finally, I got out of that halfway house and got a little apartment. And Beth would come over every night. And we'd watch that old black and white TV. Sat on the couch that had all kind of towels over it. That was in 1997 in December, Christmas Eve. I went over to Beth's house and I got on my knees. I grabbed her hand. I said, Beth, will you marry me? And I started crying. And she started crying. And her roommate walked in and said, what happened? And Beth goes,
asked me to marry you. She said, why are you crying? She goes, I don't know.
And we got married. And we started having babies. We got married on May the 30th, 1997. December the 12th, we had a little girl. Don't add it up. It's 9 months. I know how y'all are. It's not 9 months. And I'm working, man. I'm driving trucks. I'm a truck driver. A lot of people think I'm a doctor. I'm not. I know. Y'all think that stuff. And everybody in this room seen me before. Every one of you seen me before. You think I'm lying? Look. We had a little girl. We named her Lily. 4 years later, we had another little girl named Katie. In 2001. And I had a wreck, and I got my foot tore off. Completely off. Shut up. And they sewed it back on. When you live right, things happen. And my wife's been sober a year longer than I have. And me and Charlie's been going, man, we're going everywhere together. He's married, I'm married. In 2002, a truck hit his little pickup truck and killed him. My sponsor was the best guy that's ever been in my life. Ever. I'm telling you, I know unconditional love. And he got killed. And we got through that. You got a sponsor. I am telling you. Call your sponsor. Aggravate the heck out of them. You think they don't want to hear from you? Call them. Wait till it's real late, too. And my wife started, I got nothing but girls in my house all my life. I said, I want to live with chicks. Be careful what you pray for. I got chicks. And my wife's trying to help a little girl who's pregnant. She's taking marijuanas and cracks during her pregnancies. And she had a little boy. Brought that little boy to my house. He's 10 weeks old. Said, Roger, will y'all watch Christian? I said, yeah, we'll watch him. Wee, 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 wee. She didn't come back for 4 months. And y'all know what she looks like. Church people don't know. Average people. But if you say she come back in 4 months, y'all go, oh yeah. Everybody in here knows. And those two little girls of mine and my wife have fell in love with this little boy. In love with him. We just think he's the best thing, man. And she came back in 4 months. She said, I'm here to get Christian. I said, give me Christian, Beth. And my wife pulled him to her heart. She said, I'm not giving her our child back. I said, Beth, give me Christian. Come on. And Beth gave me Christian. I gave it to that little girl. She drove off. And those three girls, my wife, Lily, and Katie, went in the other room. And I'd go to work, and I'd come home, and I'd come home from work. I'd walk in the house, they'd get up off the couch and go in their room. And then, 3 nights later, that little girl come up on my porch and said, Roger, will you watch Christian? I reached out and went, hell yeah. Yes, I will. And everything was perfect in our house again. Christian's back. And my sponsor said, Roger, Do it right. Wait 2 weeks. She doesn't come back. Go file emergency adoption. And I didn't want to keep this kid. But every time I'd hold him, he'd rub his hand on my face. 2 weeks went by. I went and filed emergency adoption. It cost $1,400. I'm just a truck driver, man. And I went down there and filed. And he had to go to court 7 times. Because they sent 7 letters trying to find her to come and speak up for this child. Every time I'd go, I had to pay $1,400. And every time I'd walk in the courtroom, I'm a convicted felon. I'm not a felon. I'm a convicted felon. My sponsor says, make sure you say that. Convicted. The prosecuting attorney would come up and hug me. She put her cheeks against mine. She said, I'm so proud of you. So proud of you. You're going to get Christian. She said, I'm going to do everything I can. On the 7th day of the court, we haven't heard from that little girl. And the judge said, well, it's going to happen today. Let's do the paperwork. He's doing like this. And she busted through the door. And she started looking at us, calling us MFs, SOBs. And that judge jumped up and said, get out of my courtroom. Get out. And he gave me Christian. And while that little girl was still in the room, she said, the last people gave me a car. We're not buying freight. This is a little child. Christian's 9 years old. He'll be 10 in July. He looks just like me. Swear to God. Swear to God he does. He's built like me. Walks like me. I pick him up from school. And before I came here, I went and picked Christian up. And he runs out to the car, he gets in, he goes, Hey, Dad, guess what? I go, what? He said, they had the Ford truck here today, and they let us climb all over it. I said, really? He said, really? I said, what was the most important thing that happened today? He said, being with you. You can have my drink. You can have my drug or whatever it is. If you're a tree hugger, you can have my tree. I'll take this life that Alcoholics Anonymous gives me. All I got to do is show up and suit up. All I got to do is put my hand out in Georgia and say, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Georgia, for having me. I'm Roger. I'm an alcoholic.